they have this notion, if I could talk to them long enough,
yeah,
I can convince them
right.
that I am right. But you're dealing with a bunch of Bruce Fishers who, even when it can't, the man didn't even want to stand next to Vice President Harris.
Woo! Did y'all see that video?
He wouldn't even look her in the eye. He wouldn't even shake her hand. See, everybody kept focusing on the shaking the hand. No, no.
Yeah, they told him the cane, and he had a cane in one hand in the Bible. How could he shake her hand? Happy New Year, everybody, and welcome to the Michael Steele Podcast. God bless you. I hope you had a wonderful holiday season. We are ready to kick off 2025 with no bullshit. We are just going right to the hardcore because every once in a while, as you know, I like to invite people on together in what I call a little barbershop thing where we get to mix it up and have a little bit of fun, have a round robin conversation. And it's always a lot of fun. So today we're doing just that. We're kicking off the new year the right way. I am very happy to be joined by Karen Hunter, host of the Karen Hunter Show on SiriusXM Urban Channel, Urban View Channel 126, where she is just an absolute challenge to her listeners, getting them to participate in the success they want to see and that they want to be. It's a different kind of conversation that you don't hear anywhere else. She spent 16 years at the New York Daily News earning a Pulitzer Prize and Polk Award before turning to teaching at NYU and Hunter College. I don't know, is that her college? You have to ask about that. Anyway, Tim Miller, y'all know Tim from The Bulwark. He is a writer at large and host of The Next Level and The Bulwark Podcast. He is my partner over at The Bulwark. He is the author of the New York Times best-selling book, Why We Did It, a travelogue from the Republican road to hell. He's also an MSNBC analyst and the former political director for Republican Voters Against Trump and communications director for Jeb Bush's 2016 presidential campaign. And then, of course, the man, the one, the only, Roland Martin, the host and managing editor of Roland Martin Unfiltered, the first daily online show in history focused on news and analysis of politics and culture from an African-American perspective. They all bring it. They all keep it real. And we have fun right here with Karen Hunter, Tim Miller, and Roland Martin coming up next right here on the Michael Steele Podcast. Don't go anywhere.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the Michael Steele Podcast. Oh, my God, you can't start your new year better than this. If you want to blow some shit up, this is the way you do it with these three. I'm telling you, Karen Hunter, Roland Martin, and Tim Miller. Oh, hell yes, that's a party I want to be at. Welcome to the Michael Steele Podcast. Happy New Year to all of you for this barbershop edition. Going to get a little bit cut off the sides. Had a little bit too much off the top already, but we're working on it. Welcome, guys.
Thank you.
Glad to be here.
Happy New Year.
I just wish I had a drink.
Oh, Tim.
Alcohol causes cancer. Sorry.
Yeah, but this is true. Yeah. This is true. So I guess we'll have to drink and drink on that a little bit. Figure it out.
Gummies, then. I'll take a gummy. Is that okay, Karen?
Happy New Year. I just want to get just out of the gate as you kind of did the rewind, because I know you each did in the various platforms that you have, take that look back at 2024. So let's just kick that shit to the curb. We don't need to do that, because that's a headache that we just don't need to reinvite. But then I'm sitting here and I've watched this press conference today with the incoming president, and I was like, well, maybe the headache is the thing. I don't know. How are you guys assessing 2025? Not even a weekend so far, Karen. What's your audience saying to you?
No, like I'm very clear about not leaning into the nonsense. There's nothing we can do about it. The man's gonna be president. I'm not gonna be on high alert and anxious. I'm not gonna be taking the gummies. I'm not going to, lean into the frenzy. Instead, what I have instructed my audience, because it's not what they're saying to me, is what I'm saying to them. It's our job to provide them with a clear vision forward, is that we have to create the world we want to live in. If everyone's listening to me, you live somewhere. How do you make where you live better? How are you impacting the politics of where you live? Because worrying about whether we're going to have Canada and Panama Canal is going to be like, I don't know what's happening. I don't know whether the oceans are going away. I don't know. There's nothing I can control but where I am right now. So that's my message. Control where you are right now and do something.
Tim, what are you doing?
I think that's a good message for the audience. I think that's a good message for regular folks, because I get that. People come to me like, what can I do? What should we do? And I'm like, honestly, like we're going to have to ride the wave for a little while. And finding ways that you can get involved in your community is a good help. You know, like look local, look to ways you can make a difference. I'll say this about the national, though. The best way for the Democrats to get right, or for the anti-Trump folks, however you broadly you want to define them, to get right, is for this man to fail. And I think that sometimes you hate to look to Mitch McConnell for guidance on anything. But when Barack Obama got in, what he said in that private meeting at the Willard or wherever it was before Obama even inaugurated. He was like, guys, our job is to make this man a failed president. And that's it. The best way back for the Democrats is for this guy to fail. Whether that failure looks like a shit show, like a crazy shit show where he doesn't actually help anybody that he promised, or whether he actually hurts people, I'm pretty open to the idea that it could be either or both at various times. Making sure people are aware of that, know about that, people that aren't as engaged, I do think it's going to be an important project of those of us who are in the commentary space.
Karen, before I go to you, Roland, Karen is kind of chomping at the bits there a little bit.
No, I'm not. We live on this ball together. So, and I'm not wishing for him to be successful, but what does failure look like? World War III? And what does harm look like? I can't in good conscience, wish for that. I don't know how to respond.
I hear that, but your wishes aren't, unfortunately, our wishes don't matter. I wish our wishes mattered. If our wishes mattered, we wouldn't be here. If our wishes mattered, we'd have a different outcome. So I'm more talking about just, look, people need to be educated about the ways that he let them down, or the way, and I think that there's a nihilism that sets in, like, oh man, he won, nothing matters, nothing. And that's just not true. Like we saw in 2020, it was in people's face. His failures around COVID were part of the reason why he lost. I think his failures weren't in people's face in 2024 in the way that we like them. They were in the face of very highly engaged consumers, but his failures and his chicanery have to be publicized. I mean, I'm that's just the work. Just is.
Roland, how are you? How are you looking at this?
I think first and foremost, what people just witnessed, I believe, is a fundamental difference between who I call Democrats, progressives, liberals, because you can't just say just Democrats. That's a very broad category. You talk about the right, it's right or far right. I mean, that's just it. Okay. So if you look at the last 4 years and the 8 years of Obama, you get Republicans who every day in the Republican ecosystem, every day wished harm on America. Awful, stuck, bad, terrible. One of the reasons Biden's approval numbers were so low. Why do people feel the way they felt about the economy? Because also it was the constant drumbeat. It was recession. They called for recession every day for almost 4 years. It never actually came. And so Democrats, progressives, liberals are playing a game that no longer exists. They are still operating as if this is the 1960s or 1970s. That's gone. It's gone. And so the question is, do you get ruthless? When Biden came in, Biden, what did he say? oh, the old Republican Party is going to come back. Hillary Clinton said the exact same thing in 2016. What happened? Another ass is handed to him because he did not understand the world that we're living in. So how I've been operating, did I see the news conference? Hell no. I'm not wasting any energy on a crazy ass. First of all, okay, the inauguration is January 20th. First, I didn't do it for 4 years. You will never hear me say words like president and Trump together. Because I will never give somebody the respect of the office of president who has none. He will be called the criminal, the convicted criminal in chief. He will be called the thug in chief, insurrectionist in chief. That's how I'm going to deal with him. To Tim's point, I'm absolutely going to highlight his massive failures. Remember, Republicans and conservatives, they cried every month when the jobs report came out. Shit, more jobs. Damn, more jobs. True. I mean, every month. So we have to understand one of the reasons we are here is because the right attacked every single day anything that they did. Democrats believe in norms, believe in values. We shouldn't do that. The best of us. So we just have to understand you got two sides that are playing two totally different games. And the other side, you see what Meta, Facebook is now doing. You see the capitulation of even the billionaires. What Republicans are doing right now is not about the next 4 years. It's about 2028. It's about who controls the White House when the census comes up in 2030. That's what we're dealing with. And so Democrats, progressives, and liberals, y'all better realize this is a long game being played.
It's been a very long game for a long time. It's something I said for a number of years, going back to when I was a state chairman, that it was very clear that two different games were being played at the political level, at all levels politically, which is, you know, we're focused
on North Carolina.
We're focused on courts, and the Democrats are talking about the environment. And then when
Trump appointed federal judge just sent the election of a North Carolina Supreme Court justice to the Republican-controlled North Carolina Supreme Court. They've now issued a stay. Allison Riggs won, but they don't want a 5-2 majority. They want a 6-1 majority. And they want to beat the sister Anita Earls next year to have a 7-0 majority.
This isn't politics. I mean, this isn't partisan politics. What we're talking about today is not Democrats and Republicans.
Nope. Right.
This is not about Democrats or liberals or, you know, even
that's
if
right, white, this is not happening.
It's not. Trump was never a Republican. He was a Democrat. His children were Democrats in New York. They didn't even change their party because he wasn't running for president. And he wasn't running for president this time. He was running to stay out of jail. And that was effective. We're dealing with humanity at this point. And I don't know, you know, how we keep framing it around parties. But that's why Democrats, quote unquote, Democrats lose. And for everybody who's like, oh, you're shilling for the Democrats. I was shilling for us, for humanity. I wanted people to live and have rights and to thrive. You know, that's what I was voting for. I wasn't voting for Kamala Harris or a party. And I think if we can move away from parties and start really talking to people about what they need and start really resonating with them around the issues that matter. But Roland, you're right. I mean, this is a war that people aren't prepared for because it requires something that won't happen, which is truth, right? Where do we go to get the truth? We're not going to get it on social media.
I just did three different videos. The question, look, I'm an investor in fan base. Isaac Hayes III created that. Whether you don't have suppression of your content. And I literally said to my audience, you see what Facebook, Threads, Instagram is doing. You see the right desperately want to buy TikTok. You see what Elon Musk is doing. And I said, part of the issue is that you have to have a place where you're able to mobilize, organize, have truthful information. That's one. It's one of the reasons why I keep telling my folks, I need you to be on fan base, which I'm on as well. But two, this requires a level of ruthlessness. And see, it's hard for people to want to go there. All right. You look at what will go down. All the amazing things that President Joe Biden did. What will be the most important thing people remember? The massive failure of Merrick Garland. You know why? Because Democrats, liberals, progressives don't want to be ruthless. They don't want to do it. If you look at places where they control the state house, the state senate, and the governor's mansion, are they being ruthless with their power? No. Be nice, congenial. They're not locking down power. They're not being ruthless. Biden should have appointed somebody who, from day one, I'm going after Trump's ass. But see, what he did is the same reason Mitch McConnell did not vote to convict. Oh, you know what? This is it. This is the bottom. He's going to go away. No.
Yeah. So to all of the points, which really, it was funny on our show last week, and Simone lost her mind on Hakeem Jeffries' passing of the gavel. And in the first minute of his speech, what did he talk about? He says, it's now time to bury the political, sword and pick up the bipartisan plowshare. And I'm sitting there going, what the hell are you talking about? Something? Do you know who's in the room with you?
Right.
Do you have any idea? Or right. That majority, the guy standing next to you is going to take that bipartisan plowshare and shove it up your political ass. You recognize that? And in fact, Johnson comes out and unveils last week that, to your point, Karen, about humanity, number one priority for the Speaker of the House is what, people? What is it? Banning trans people from sports. That's his number one priority as Speaker of the House. Well,
and the tax cuts and the deportations.
No. Actually, no, it's not tax cuts and deportation. What Michael just said, because what they've done is they understand this culture battle. Because here's the reality. If we really want to be honest about our personal conversations, the trans issue, that pisses off, actually, people who vote Democrat. That is a cultural issue. And that's why last year, I remember talking to the Biden campaign, they were running those radio ads on Black radio stations in January, yep, February, and March.
Yep.
They were testing the radio.
That began long before everybody recognized it.
And once they saw it was Black male voices, I remember talking to the campaign going, are y'all not seeing? Did y'all hear the ads? Oh, you know what? And they literally said, oh, you know, we don't think it's going to move at the needle. I'm like, you're crazy. So what they're doing is they're taking the culture buttons. Howard Dean said in 2004, God gave guns. And so that's why you have union workers who got everything under Biden Harris still say, yo, I'm riding with Trump. We can't ignore the culture. We can't ignore white identity politics. We can't ignore all these things that are happening. So the question now becomes, again, are you going to have Democrats who understand you're in a brawl? You're not in a boxing match where there are rules. They're grabbing 2x4s. They're grabbing chains wrapped around your neck. This is what that's what's going on. And I'm sitting there like, y'all don't see.
Look,
y'all being cute.
So why Tim and I from the Republican side, and Tim was no longer Republican, is kind of in that space where, you know, that
no man's land.
No man's land, but still holds those sort of values, those traditional Republican values that everybody talks to. From that side, we kind of look at it and we're sitting there, and I know we both had these conversations with people on both the Harris and the Biden campaigns, such as they were at relevant times. And going, to your point, Roland, what the hell are you doing? Why do Democrats in the face of all of this? And just this week with Hakeem Jeffries still level up a strategy that starts with, oh, we're burying the political hatchet, kumbaya, let's all get along, but we're not going to help you when you come to us this time. Well, if you're doing kumbaya, you're telling me already you're going to help them when they come to you. So I don't get what they think the outcome is going to be here when the Speaker of the House tells you, no, we're going after trans people. We're still playing
the culture. I'd be interested in Karen and Roland saying this, because my theory is, and I'm an outsider to this, like these are all my new allies, that it's just something I notice. I think it's human nature. I think there's something about progressives in their nature. And this is a nice trait, actually, in most things. It's like there's this agreeableness, right? Like there's a wanting to get to, you know, an answer. Like, whereas, like, Republicans by nature have kind of this Lee Atwater, like, I want to tear people down, like, element. And I, obviously, that's broad strokes. There are plenty of disagreeable folks, particularly on the far left. But, like, I think that a lot of, like, the Democratic leadership, like the center left, there's something culturally that, like, you succeed going up the ladder in Democratic politics by being kind of agreeable, you know, going along to get along. And so it's hard to become ruthless. But I don't know. Maybe that's bad anthropology.
I can't speak to it. I can't speak to it.
Can I give it some? Give
no, it I can speak to it. I'm telling you. Democrats, liberals, progressives, Mike, you talked about kumbaya. They have this notion that if I could just, this was Obama's trait. If I could talk to them long enough, I can convince them
right.
That I am right. But you're dealing with a bunch of Bruce Fishers who, even when it can't, the man didn't even want to stand next to Vice President Harris.
Woo! Did y'all see that video?
He wouldn't even look her in the eye. He wouldn't even shake her hand. See, everybody kept focusing on the shaking the hand. No, no.
Yeah, they told him the cane, and he had a cane in one hand in the Bible. How could he shake her hand?
I posted the full 56-second video.
Yes, you did.
His wife was like, stand here. But guess what? Somebody posted the video of when Pence was vice president and when Biden was vice president. He knew where to fucking stand. He did it twice before, but he was like, I have contempt for this black woman. I am not even, I'm not even giving her the respect and the dignity.
He never looked in the eye. About irrespective
that's who of they whether are.
He shook her hand, the man never looked her in the eye. He never looked her like, in the quick, face the so, entire so is,
so,
time.
So Democrats... Well, this is Democrats. Well, you know, he had a cane in his right hand, so he's a little unstable. So maybe that. Democrats will start searching for these.
It's ableist to make fun of him. It's ableist to make. It's ageist and ableist to go after him.
So what I mean ruthless. What I mean ruthless. There's a thing called winning. Now, y'all, this is. I was in the 10th grade. This is. Now, sorry, I learned politics at a very early age. And it's an organization called the Knights of Peter Clay, the Junior Knights of Peter Clay. It's the largest black Catholic organization, the adult division. So I'm in the junior division. So we're at a national convention, and there was a unit from Texas, from Houston, that voted against us. It was something on the national level. So when it's time for us to go to church, we all lined up by state. I told them, you got the line. And the guy was like, what do you mean? I said, y'all voted against us. Get your ass out the line. You ain't marching in with us. And so one of the guys bucked up. I said, you want to have a conversation about the alcohol and the weed in your room, or you'll get your ass the fuck out of the line. And mind if you're going to a church service. Now, here's the whole deal. I was about winning. So I was like, get the fuck out the line. I don't care who you are. Democrats don't want to be ruthless.
Yeah.
Your opposition is ruthless. And so whoever's a DNC chair has to call a meeting with the head of the House Majority PAC, the Senate Majority PAC, the DCCC, the DGA, the DSCC, and say, are y'all going to get your heads out of your asses, and are you now going to play a much more vigorous, ruthless game of politics, which is called winning? Losing by small margins is not winning. And that, to me, I think is the fundamental problem, and that I'm telling my audience, win. You win. When you win, you then exercise power. You use power. You don't dance around with it. You wield power.
Yeah,
Democrats unafraid to do so.
I agree with all of that. But you're still having elements within that party that need to reconcile itself to that thinking. And so that lends itself, I think, to a lot of stagnation. And part of that stagnation, I think, was, I sum it up this way, the first 18 months of the Biden administration, they were in a fight with Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema over the filibuster. And the country was asking themselves, who's Phil? Who's Buster? I don't know these people. What are they doing in the Senate? So when you see that, and then you see the way this ended for Biden, how does his legacy set up what comes next for Democrats? In other words, the man who stayed too long for dinner, right? And then finally you basically kind of boot him out onto the curb. And he was polite enough to stand there and still say nice things about the homeowners. What is his ultimate legacy going to be in the face of what you're saying, Roland, a party that's now looking for new leadership, having to transform itself? How much of that legacy do they hold on to and carry over into this new era, which is dominated by a MAGA cultism that is rooted in authoritarian fascism in order to rule and control power? What does that look like for you, Karen? I don't know.
I'm not focusing on any of this. So, you know, it's interesting watching. I think this is part of the problem. You know, we Monday morning quarterback things that aren't really happening in people's lives. Right. We're having an internal, this is the problem with the folk are having internal conversations with themselves and talking to each other. That's why the numbers are down everywhere. I'm saying roll up the sleeves. Let's get busy in them streets and do the things that we need to do and not focus on, you know, policy and people in politics, but let's really build the world we want to live in. I'm going to stick to that.
What does that look like for you, though? I mean, when you have that conversation, because I think it's a powerful thing to say to your audience, what does that look like?
I'm from East Orange, right? So we impacted the mayor, the police chief lived on my street. So policing looked different. You know, we had block association meetings every month that rotated in people's houses. So we knew everybody. We had a nosy neighbor that would make sure nobody was getting broken into. There was a community, right? And as people run to safety or they're running to good school systems, they are missing that the actual powers in the people taking back and reclaiming their neighborhoods. And then once you do that, then you look at the legislature, show up for your city council meetings, your alderman meetings. How are they planning your city? And are you involved in it? I just had a talk with Ross Baraka, who said when people show up, he just had a meeting and the lady got up and then he went and fixed her problem because he can hear and see what needs to happen because people are engaged. We can sit on the sidelines and complain and yell into the void, but the reality is everybody's living somewhere.
Right.
And we want things. And it's not bathrooms for trans people, whatever. It's I want the gas prices, and that's companies gouging, and that's all. We have a voice, and we have shown it when we show up. Look,
I know Karen's gotta run. I want to connect her. Yeah. Go ahead, Roland.
No, go ahead.
Karen's getting ready to go. I want to make sure.
Yeah, I just was gonna try to connect Karen's point to Biden. Here's the thing, man. This Biden knew that. Biden kind of, for a politician, you know, politicians are going to politician, but he lived kind of what Karen was talking about. I mean, like, he was good at being in the community, at, like, being pictured on the floor with the union guys, at walking in the strikes, at going to black churches. You go to a black church in Wilmington, Biden was going there. He was showing up. And I don't know, maybe it was the age, maybe it's you're in D.C. for so long, but I do feel like a lot of these Democratic leaders, man, they've lost touch. And you guys can maybe speak better to me, to work class black folks.
I'm not a Democrat.
I mean, you can speak better to me than what the feeling is in black communities and black churches. But I'm telling you, in red states and huge swaths of this country, they feel like a lot of these Democrats have gotten comfortable.
Yes. Right. Yes.
Look, this is
Karen, I know. Good to see you. Happy New Year. Tim, good to see you.
Good to see you, Karen. Let's talk again soon. I love that.
You know, we got some stuff to do. I appreciate y'all. Happy New Year, everybody.
Bye-bye. Happy New Year, Karen. Thanks for being with us.
Here's a reality. Karen said that we were having insular conversations. No, we're not. The conversations that we're having are the exact same conversations that people are having outside. What she talked about is exactly what we've been talking about. It's still power. Now, the question is, how do you get there? She's talking about, oh, focus on better communities. Listen, my parents were co-founders of a civic club. So the reason I feel that this is in my bones is because I witnessed it at the age of 9, 10, 11,
Roland, I get all that. But here's the deal. You don't have you don't have that civic level of involvement.
No. Actually, you do. No, you do.
Where is it?
Here's what I'm talking about. It's there. The problem is on the left, and the reason I'm saying, for the sake of where we are now, sure, left and right, on the left, what you have is, in terms of the apparatus, in terms of the funders, the donors, all those different individuals, they're operating here. I'm going to go back to 2008. Obama wins. What was happening in 2008? Rahm Emanuel, Paul Begala, James Carville were just pining for Howard Dean to get fired. Why? Because Dean was talking about 50-state strategy. I remember I brought this up on CNN. Oh, yeah. Carville got mad at me, and he was like, well, that's what we were doing. I'm like, that's what you were doing. They wanted to focus on national elections. Dean was trying to say, no, you got to build 50 states. What happened with Rahm Emanuel? So what did Obama do? Obama fires Dean. Who does he hire? Tim Kaine. Really? You go from Howard Dean to Senator Tim Kaine. Senator Tim Kaine, nice guy, but that's not what you needed. But here's also what happened when Rahm Emanuel became chief of staff. What did he say? I'm sick of these fucking leftists keep talking about judges. Rahm Emanuel didn't give a shit about federal judges. Democrats kept saying, dude, it's the judicial piece. So what I'm trying to say here, it's about understanding mobilization and organization. Mobilize, organize. If you become focused on the top and you totally ignore school district races, city council races, all different races. And so what happened? Obama's DNC ignored that. They lost more than 1,000 seats. So
Thank you very much. It was good work for me.
I'm just
Great work, Chairman.
I'm telling you, to your point,
to your point, Roland, the reason that worked for on my side, because I did that 50-state strategy. That's exactly what I did. I took Howard Dean's blueprint, laid it over the country, and said, right, this is what we're going to do.
So the problem is, on the left, the problem is, from the organization and the mobilization standpoint, it's literally being run and funded by these entities. They're not grassroots based.
Right.
So what was one of the failures of the Harris campaign? They were spending millions on concerts, but not boots on the ground. They weren't funding third-party groups. They weren't funding people who were touching the ground. So the problem is, so why do you have voting down? Because if I'm waiting for the party and the candidate to now come in, that means that the organization doesn't start until 6 months out, as opposed to what Black Voters Matters does. Black Voters Matter. They mobilize and organize 365-7. So what I have been telling my audience, guess what? In Virginia, there are two races in the House and the Senate will determine who controls the both houses, because the candidates won in November. You've got a Supreme Court race in Wisconsin. That's an open seat where if Democrats get control of that, they can have a 5-2 majority on the Supreme Court. Democrats nationally, Congressman Hakeem Jeffries, Jamie Harrison, Senator Chuck Schumer, they should be weighing in on what's happening in North Carolina in the Supreme Court race. Then you've got all the seats in Virginia up in November. You got gubernatorial elections. They have to be refocused on winning, because this is what winning does. If you win here, people go, well, we won. You win here, or we won. You're building excitement. Yeah. You have to rebuild people's psyche. You only do that by winning. That's what I'm talking about. And they are so focused on rehashing why she lost. Guess what? I can't focus on 28 if I ignore 26, but I can't get to 26. Let's deal with 25.
You got to deal with 25. When I came chairman in 09 after 08 and 06 drubbings, that was really the focus. I needed a test case for the theory that the party could reestablish itself with its base first, right? And then to build out from there to grow, to win elections. It's an important piece of that. But I think the other side of this is, as we focus on what ails the Democrats in terms of their understanding of and the use of power, is the Republican side of it that is decrepit and decayed from within. And I posited something on Nicole's show yesterday, which I want to share with you guys to get your thought on. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to dig a little bit deeper with my buddy Tim Miller and Roland Martin on a look at what Republicans really look like inside. We're going to do that right here on the Michael Steele podcast right after this.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Welcome back, folks, to the Michael Steele Podcast. We're getting into a little bit deep here with my man Tim Miller and Roland Martin. Want to give a shout out and thanks again to my girl Karen Hunter for joining us in the first part of our time together. So gents, for me, this the Republican side of this equation, as Democrats sort of wring their hands and kind of figure out how to be basically, as Roland's saying, fighters in the fight, actually engage their opponent. Republicans have been very, very good at that and for a long, long time, and a lot longer than I think people realize. So I want to share with you some thoughts that I laid on with Nicole Wallace yesterday, who was talking about the Republican Party and why it is the way it is. And I wanted to sort of say it's been this way for a long time. Let's take a quick listen.
Maybe, just maybe, that blood supply that you refer to was bad from the beginning. Mm. And that this idea that this party ever stood for those things that it fell so quickly away from really mattered. That maybe the political expediency was propping up this idea of the Constitution, propping up this idea of the rule of law, propping up this idea of individual liberties and responsibilities in a manner that would never lead it to impinge upon the individuals in this country against their rights and support the government taking control of those rights. Maybe that was the fallacy. Maybe that was the lie. And a lot of us involved in this party, yourself included, didn't see that or were just really idealistic in our view, saying, yeah, this is what we're all going for. But in reality, the subtext was, nah, that's not what it's about. And then Trump pulled back that curtain and exposed the truth of what the party was always about. And actually, there's historic relevancy to that. When you look at the capitulation after the Civil War, how quickly that happened for so many Republicans who turned aside Reconstruction, the capitulation on civil rights, Republicans who turned away from the very fight for the liberty and freedom of African Americans, the capitulation for the rule of law with allowing someone like a Nixon and now a Trump to actually be the standard bearer of the party. Barry Goldwater stripping away the party's relevancy on civil rights, the embrace, the near embrace of the John Birch Society back in the 50s. So we've been here and just didn't either accept it for what it was or thought it was actually something else. And I think we know better.
My point was that this Republican Party has been corrupt of purpose for a longer time than we may want to admit. That our history demonstrates at various times a willingness to move into that darker space. At the same time, we talk about liberty and freedom. we're moving away from the civil rights of the very African Americans the party was formed to free. How do you guys see the party, this version of the party, in the context of its history and the history of the country, when you look at, yeah, okay, at all those points, they kind of moved a little bit closer to the thing that we now see exposed by Trump.
Yeah, man. You always try to tell these stories. It's like angels and demons, you know. Like the people, they were always, you know, deep. You know, like we all are sinners, right? Like we all got good things inside of us, and that's all a party is a gathering of people and made up of people. And like, so when I like listen to that, you kind of give that history lesson, which is valuable. Like to me, the thing that comes to mind is just leadership actually matters, right? Like, and yeah, like is the party, you know, is it made up of a lot of people that, you know, generally are culturally conservative and generally are hostile to government, but could be nudged one way or the other based on what the leaders are pushing for? Like, that's kind of what I think, right? Like, are there a lot of people that have racial resentment that make up the party? Yeah. Like, could they be nudged towards their better angels by leaders that are that know how to speak that language? Yeah. Could they be nudged towards their darker impulses by ones that want to unleash it? Yeah. Like, so to me, like, that is what I see. I see, yeah, the party, maybe we didn't notice how strong that strain was. So some of us that were inside the party, I don't know, maybe Roland noticed, but some of us that are inside the party didn't notice how strong that, you know, center strain was, if you will. But and maybe it was bigger than we expected it to be. But yeah, it was definitely always there. And I think that that's why the people that disappoint me the most are the ones that are in leadership positions that know better, right? Because they are. We know that they're there because they told us. They told us on January 7th. They told us in 2015. Yeah. That's why all those old clips that we all do of Lindsey Graham from 10 years ago get me so mad still, because it's like, you're telling us that you knew better, but you've given in to these darker impulses. And I think that failure has happened periodically throughout history, as you laid out.
But it wasn't the first of all, Tim. Yes, I did recognize it, which is, and I saw it clearly.
I knew what you were going to say. I handed it to you.
No. It's very simple, which is why this was published.
Look at you.
So again, I wouldn't need people to understand the basis of my book, White Fear, and how the Browning of America is making white folks lose their minds. So I'm explaining to people the basis of that. It was a survey that was taken. And it was shortly before Obama was inaugurated. And the question was asked, are you optimistic about the future of America for your children? Black people, Hispanic people, Asian people, everybody, majority said yes. Only one group was less than a majority, white America. Now,
this is after Obama was elected, but before inauguration, is that what you're saying?
Yes. Most mainstream media people ain't deeper than mustard on a hot dog. Okay. So they're not going to go deeper. And I was like, yo, what's up with this? And I remember having a conversation with John Avlon. We were talking about his book, Wing Nuts, or whatever it was called. And I said, John, we are living in the beginning stages of white minority resistance. He was like, the white Americans are the majority of people in the country. I'm like, yes. But they're going to be acting like they're the minority. So what did you begin to see? Glenn Beck, Obama hates black people. You begin to see what Fox News was doing. You begin to see the rhetoric. You begin to see Tea Party. You begin to see all these things. September 2016, another survey. Are you optimistic about the future of America economically for the next 10 years? Black people, lowest wealth, highest optimism. Latinos, second lowest wealth, highest optimism. White Americans, highest wealth, lowest optimism. Same thing. I'm like, yo, what's going on? So what you're seeing, why was immigration so potent? Wall Street Journal just had an article a week ago. What happened in Germany?
Yeah.
What happened in Europe the last 10 years? What has happened is Western countries, white people stopped screwing. They stopped having babies.
They did. Okay. Now you're in good company at the Bulwarks. Natalism. Roland. I'm with you.
Very serious.
Let's have more babies.
People look at the battles in Europe in the last decade. Italy, Germany, Ireland, France, England. They have been going crazy because of immigration. Now, it's interesting. You read the Wall Street Journal article. They're like, oh, yeah, we need more people in Germany. But, oh, my God, this is like taxing the system. That sounds like Springfield, Ohio. Oh, my God, these Haitians coming in. Your city was dying. Your city was literally dying.
And oh, my God.
These people are coming in, and they're buying up houses. But you had nobody there to buy the fucking houses. And so you're mad because you have growth. The problem wasn't growth. It was black growth. And so when a Trump says, well, I can't get with people from Denmark or from
Norway. Norway.
They don't.
Fucking Norway.
So now, but here's the other piece.
Why? The Biden economic plan didn't work. It's not about economics, it's about culture. They put the plants in red America, but they need to have brown and black people to work in them. So then it was bad.
And so the attacks on DEI, the attacks on affirmative action, you got white men running around like, oh my God, we can't find jobs. When, because of the attacks on DEI, the numbers of new board of directors, it was a low of 52% white, now it's back up to 69%. So you get this entire culture that, oh my God, we're losing. Our way of life is going away. Now somebody who's watching is like, but you're calling us racist. And this is the fundamental problem, because now you bring in Reconstruction. The view is, my views on immigration, that's not racist. My views on DEI, that's not racist. Dr. Field, he named his network Merit TV. I believe in merit. When is the last time you heard Dr. Field or any Republican say, you know what? I think legacy admissions is bad. You know what? I think it's bad if you call your boss and say, hire my son. See, they don't mind legacy because they don't see that as, that's not quotas. So now that mentality of the future of us losing power now begins to infiltrate entire politics. And we, the Republican Party, and your party is frankly a white party, where you ain't really talking to brown people, now all of a sudden that begins to drive your policy. And here's the last piece, which I lay out in my book. Mainstream media has not wanted to touch this. I'm about to blow y'all away. A anchor of a broadcast network called me and said, I would love to have you on my show, but my producers don't like the title of your book. I said, you know, I talked about those very producers in my book. So the problem that is mainstream media, and I'm going to go ahead and say it, ABC, NBC, CBS, MSNBC, Fox News, of course, CNN, they don't want to have the real conversation that whiteness is also identity politics. They only see identity politics as you black people, you Latino black, people, you gay people, folks, and you women.
Gay people,
So we don't want to contend with the cultural battle is actually a battle of whiteness.
Well, that explains, in large part, the reaction to Vivek Ramaswamy and Elon Musk talking sort of...
Boom!
Right? They're talking about, those HB1 visas. Yeah, we got a whole different plan. We need to bring black and brown people in because you white men are dumb as shit. And guess what? As I said, Elon Musk, Vivek Ramaswamy, none of these folks, and this is very true, all these billionaires that are coddling up the Trump himself, they're not, Elon is not hiring these folks to work at SpaceX. He's not hiring
You don't think so? No, the guys from the MAGA rally, you don't think any of them are going to work for Palantir?
Hell no.
For Peter Thiel? He's not hiring MAGA rally.
This is what I keep saying about those idiot MAGA people, Donald Trump won't even let y'all walk through his hotel lobby. He don't give a damn about these people. And
it's working too. I got some friends from college from Ole Miss that went and up to Chicago and sent me a selfie from the Trump Tower dinner they were having. I was like, you guys are marks.
Dude, you talking about marks? Wait a minute. You had
well done, this steak.
Crazy. Donald Trump's tariffs, the last time he was, because I don't say president, I say occupant of the Oval Office. The last time he occupied the Oval Office, he literally caused farmers to go bankrupt in the Midwest.
Sure did.
I remember reading a story where this one farm, if y'all want to know how delusional these people are, one of the farmers said, I know I lost my family farm, but I will support them again. I said, you have got to be out your fucking mind. You can't counter that.
Well, and that's why you not only saw what you saw play out in this general election, irrespective of the Democrats' incompetency and communication, a few other things politically, it seems as if it's almost a little bit baked in when you have that response to someone like Trump. So Tim, what does the second term look like that begins in 2 weeks?
Let me just really quick on you can't counter that. Here's my thought.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I just say briefly, just that part of it though is the Democrats have to realize they're in a culture battle and fight on culture grounds that are winning culture grounds. Not culture grounds make them feel good, but culture grounds that are politically winning. That goes back to your point from earlier, Roland. But like, you know, the Springfield is such a prime example. The people who say this was about economic, and sure, elections are complex, inflation played a part, but like, it's not really about economics. Like their anger was about culture. But the Republicans gained some ground on that culture fight with working class black and brown folks, and Democrats need to fight that battle, and Democrats need to be the party again of calling for change that cares about these people's lives and wants to make them better. And I'm talking about all working class folks across the board, and not like be the party of the incumbents. We want things to stay the same. So anyway, I think that's how you combat it. You try to regenerate that mantle of being the ones that are fighting the man, not the one that are the man, and that you engage in culture battles for what they are and see them clearly rather than like pretending like, you know, putting a plant in Springfield is going to help, because it didn't. It backfired, actually.
Well, first of all, let me explain this idea in terms of how they gain. This is people need to understand. When black voter participation drops, then what is perceived as a gain is really not a gain. It was always there. So the problem is, if you look at the last, since Obama's election in 2008, we're actually falling back towards pre-Obama voting participation. Yep. Then you throw in the Shelby v. Holder decision.
Right.
Okay, then you throw all of that. Now all of a sudden you have a complete targeting to contract the black vote. But here's the other piece that
there was a real gain though among Hispanic and like Hispanic Asian. Like if you go to the border, like that's a gain. Like there were Hispanic districts that became
right, yeah. right. Because again, Democrats are operating by 1994 data and 1994 game plans. This is what I mean. The further you get away from the civil rights movement, then you have fewer black people to self-identify. Okay, so 65 and older, that baby boomer, that they will self-identify as Democrats. So you go to 55, then 45, lower. What's the one group that Trump won? Gen X. Okay, that's the only demographic that he actually won was Gen X. So when you go lower, African Americans are not self-identifying, which means you're the Democrats. You just can't just roll out the usual game plan and say, oh, they're going to show up. No. What did Jean O'Malley Dillon and David Plouffe and Quentin Folks and Stephanie Cutter do? They ran that Obama plan from 2008. Yeah. That shit don't work in 2024, because the person who was 10 in 2008 is now 26. And so that person is like, what you gonna do? So here's what I think when I say, how do you counter it? And I said this to Obama, and I said to the Biden people, I don't understand why they still play games. You got to be willing to go look broke ass white people in the eye. And you got to be able to go. See, when you said wait for Trump to fail, all Republicans, please get rid of the Affordable Care Act. And then you want to go to the brokest, thickest, reddest, whitest parts of Alabama and Mississippi and Arkansas and say, you know, we passed that law for your broke, stick ass. And the people you keep voting for screwed your health care. They don't want to do Medicaid expansion. They don't want Medicare for all. Yeah. See, you got, see, broke white people in America don't actually think they broke.
Well, see, they know it.
But see, you gotta be willing to look at me in the eye and say, you gotta be willing to look at my eye and say, oh, I'm sorry. That we built that. Oh, by the way, he voted against it. She voted against it. So we see they don't.
I think a big part of what you're saying there goes to the heart of a very important point that taps into the identity politics and the culture politics. Is one of the things that has been successful, I think, in the political speak, in the political indoctrination and culturation of a lot of poor white people, is the fact that whiteness was a safeguard. At the end of the day, I'm still not like you. And
you gotta put it on the table.
You put it on the table that you are exactly like them.
Dude, you mentioned Reconstruction. It is an undeniable fact. In the history of America, at every period when Black people fought for civil and economic rights, white people benefited. I'm about to mess up a lot of white women. White women, y'all keep voting for Trump and the Republicans.
They do.
Guess what, white women? You have been the greatest beneficiaries of affirmative action more than anybody else. You know why? Because when they say MWBE Enterprises, the W should be WW, white women. Y'all have gotten more contracts than anybody else. White women who are doctors and lawyers and engineers in professional schools, y'all should be thanking Black people, because Title IX, y'all ain't know where in the hell Title IX comes from. It comes from the 1964 Civil Rights Act, which Black people fought for. And you know why y'all were included? Because a racist in Virginia, Judge Smith, inserted women thinking he was going to kill the bill, and it didn't. So y'all got Title IX, which opened the professional schools up because of the law. That was Black people who fought for the law. So I'm saying
it also went into sports and right. It's business, sports, all of those spaces.
All these white women who are CEOs, all these white women who are boards of directors, you benefited because guess what? White men wanted y'all in the kitchen having babies at home. Let's just go ahead and put it out there.
Coming back, Harrison Butker. Right? Past tense. Josh Hawley's all about that.
We just got to be honest about this here. And so what we're dealing with, so Democrats are trying to play nice about it. And I said this to Senator Bernie Sanders. I said, if you keep talking identity politics, I said, I'm going to whack your ass publicly. I told him that to his face. I said, Ben, you about to have a problem. Because Bernie keeps thinking class, class, class. He keeps yelling identity politics. I'm like, dude, I wish these people could stop. Was like, if the Democrat, Bill Maher, shut the fuck up. Oh, Democrats keep going identity politics. Michael, you were the chair of the party.
Yeah.
Correct me if I'm wrong. All of politics is about segmenting groups.
Yes.
You segment based upon race, age, geography.
All of politics is identity politics.
Gender. All of it.
Yeah, it can go wrong, though.
It can go wrong. Tim, you were, but to this point, Tim, you were a comms guy. Yeah. And so your communication was based on identity, right?
For sure. No, for sure. Like, for sure. And it's totally overstated by the critics. That said, identity politics can go awry. And like, you know, we don't need to go over all the ways that it has for the Democrats, but there are times where the Democrats have let some elite members of one group we'll use the obvious one, for example, Latinos, like some Latino academics decided that they wanted to use Latinx or Latinx, right, which I wanted to call it. And so then Democratic groups were like, we're doing identity politics by saying we're reaching out to Latinx people. But then all the voters are like, what the hell are you talking about? If you're going to do identity politics, just do it right, though. Sometimes the Democrats think they're pandering, but they're only pandering to a tiny group of people that are already going to be with them instead of pandering to the actual demographic. Like, I want to see some good pandering from the Democrats, because advice.
That goes back to the fundamental problem of Democrats, is that sometimes you can be so smart you dumb as shit.
Right.
So what happens is Democrats, you have Democrat elites who are in these very small circles.
Yep.
And let me also add, in those small elite Democrat circles, they pretty damn white and exclusionary. So they come up
with shit educated like at minimum.
They come up with shit like Latinx and didn't go talk to none of the people who fall in the category. I mean, I remember when it first came out, I was like, and I'm born and raised in Texas. I'm like, y'all, they're like, hell no, we don't use that. So Latinos, remember, even we talk about Latinos / Hispanics, because in America, this is still politics. You can't treat a Texan, a Mexican American in Texas, the same way a Chicano in Chicago,
nope,
or Puerto Rican, yeah, or Dominican, nope, Republic,
I'm or the Venezuelan, politics,
or
right,
Cuban. And so,
that's what Tim is saying. Tim is saying, get your identity politics right. If you're gonna do it right.
But also, we have to. This is where Democrats don't want to deal with it. You have to confront whiteness, and what I mean by that is, you have to literally say things that are going to make some people uncomfortable. You have to be willing to go, when I say go to those places, and challenge them head on. And I see all these stories, and David Sirota keeps putting this stuff out. Oh, Democrats, they lost the working class. I kept saying, no, it's called the white working class. See, right, they don't even want to say it then, because they don't want to even confront. If we just put this all the shit on the table right now, if you look at what Biden, Harris did, Democrats did for the last 4 years, please tell me how the white working class or the working class got screwed. The white working class got a hell of a whole lot. But when the right demonizes what you do, and then you don't even know how to talk to people and willing to engage them in a serious way, you have to stand in front of somebody and say, you like that health care, huh? Oh, sure. Affordable Care Act, it ain't perfect, but is it better than having no health care? Oh, let's talk about SNAP benefits. Let's just not talk about SNAP benefits from a poor standpoint. It's called the working class. Let's talk about those real things. See, they don't, because they don't actually want you. I'm just going to go put it out here. If I hear another Democrat fucking talk about the middle class the entire time, I'm sorry. Is that the only class in America? Can you actually say the working poor? Can you actually say low income people? No, the middle class. It's more people in the damn lower income bracket than the damn middle class bracket. But see, we don't want to be honest with this, because we don't want to sit on, I don't know, because I know how they feel. You got to tell some broke ass white people who live in towns in the Midwest that nobody is moving to. No, you got to go ahead and say it. There are broke ass white people living in towns in the Midwest nobody's moving to. But don't send those fucking migrants, because guess what? Your town might get revitalized, and now you're pissed because they're there.
Well, that raises 2 points for me. One of them was the fact that I got into a little bit of a pissing match with a member of Congress from the South, who was going on, and again, making that false equivalency between being poor and being black. If you think poor, the images of a black person or a black family.
And that's media.
And I had to point out to him that in his particular congressional district, the vast majority of the people on welfare were his white constituency. In fact, African Americans in his district were doing quite well.
Hold on. You guys share with us. So when you hit him with that truth bomb, what happened?
Well, not much. Not much.
Did he go, what? Michael, how dare you?
Right.
My white people are not broke.
That was essentially it. That was essentially the reaction, not just from his office, but from the media, that this, again, this classification was something that they did not want to apply to the very people it should be applied to. Because I don't know how you do math when if you're proud to say the majority of these people are white and we're happy, then that would lead me to believe that the majority of poor people in this country would be white too. And yet we don't want to have that conversation. We want to create this illusion that all the wealth and the concentration of the middle class is white, when in fact that is not the relevant reality for a lot of those families, which again, going to how we've looked at this conversation, led Democrats to sort of come up with the narratives that they did that completely missed the white working poor.
Look, I'm going to be gangster. Okay, Tim, you did comms, right?
I did, man.
Okay, here's how you do gangster with comms. All that shit Democrats passed, Republicans voted against, they were there for the ribbon cutting. Biden should have said, send Harris down. Biden should have said, I'm a pop up. See, I just think that sometimes you gotta pop up and say, all right, we want to let y'all know.
You want Kanye taking that Golden Globe away from Taylor Swift? That's what you wanted him out there? I'm taking those big scissors out of your hands. You didn't vote for that.
You damn Skippy. Let me tell you how gangster I am. I would sit here and send an invite to that Republican member of Congress saying, fly down on Air Force One or Two with me for the ribbon cutting. See, I'm not going to cede any territory to my opposition. I'm a rain on they parade at every time.
Well, guys, I really hate to wind this down because I'm having so much fun with this conversation, but I do want to sort of leave on this point. On your point you just made, Roland, which I think is important, as a strategy over the next 2 years, actually the next 18 months, got to bring a lot of fucking rain. You can't sit there as the minority leadership in the House and talk about, oh, we're going to turn our swords into plowshares. No, we're going to use our swords against your bad policies, against your bad people, against a presidency that is wanton and illegal in its approach. I don't see that happening though. I'm not convinced, gentlemen, that that's the Democratic Party we're going to see in this battle. And I think Republicans already know that.
Yeah, me neither. And it's the inverse of Roland's coin, right? It was a failure that they didn't sell the CHIPS Act and those projects. Part of it was a bureaucratic failure. I'm going to sound like a Republican for a second, there's too much red tape. They didn't build the shit that they paid for fast enough. But part of it was a comms failure also. And the inverse of that is the comms failure on this time. It's like, that you got to be publicizing the word that Carville keeps using is betrayal. You got to be publicizing the ways that Trump is going to betray his own people because he is going to do it. Like it is not helping people who are struggling at the grocery store to invade Panama. You know, it's not helping the people of Springfield, you know, or whatever. Like it's not helping these people if you're out there doing corrupt deals over Bitcoin with some Saudi guys that are trying to scratch Trump's back. Like time, there will be issue after issue. And the Democrats have to just stand in the way and say, look, you guys bought it. You got it. I got that wrong. You guys broke it. You bought it. You bought it. Right. It's yours now. This government is yours. Let's see you govern. Because your party, my former party, hasn't demonstrated that we could govern since like 2002. Like was the last time they could govern. Like John Boehner was the speaker the last time these guys governed. And at the end, he couldn't do it. So like it's been a generation since they could govern. And so it's like, you guys govern. We're not going to help you. The last time you left office, people were storming the Capitol and there was shit on our Capitol and the police officers were dying. The time before that, we were in a stupid war and in a recession. Like, let's see it. Let's see it. Let's see you guys govern. We're going to sit over here. We're going to help our constituents where we can. And then when you fail, because you will, we're going to publicize your failures. And that's our job for the next 18 months. I don't think they're going to do that, but that's what they should do.
Let me tell you something. When they come with that bill, hooking the billionaires up, this is how I'm on television. Hey, y'all, here's the bill. On page 828, they're saying, billionaire, you get to write off 100% of your new Gulfstream jet. Page 920. See, you pull out the most egregious examples of corporate welfare, and you don't call them subsidies. You call it corporate welfare. And you say, this page and this page and this page, and that's what you do. And you send everybody out on every show. And then you say, oh, no, y'all want another one? How about this? How about this? Right. See, you don't sit here and go, this bill is full of pork barrel projects. No, you have to literally, the American newspaper is written on a fourth grade level for a reason. And so you've got to talk to America like they're fourth graders. And Democrats, don't come with your fucking policy papers and your thesis and your damn defending a dissertation. No, you're not defending a dissertation on fucking television. What you're doing is you're communicating to regular people and you say tax cut, millionaires, billionaires, not you. Oh, and guess what? Then you say, hey, remember those last tax cuts? And Trump said they're going to help the regular people. No, CEOs stock buyback. That means you didn't get a raise. You didn't get a raise. You didn't get a raise. Man, you just got to just go ahead.
To that point, Roland, when you show that 800, 900 page document, and you say, oh, yes, they're going to write off 100% of their corporate jet on this page. Let me take you to page 227, where they just cut your SNAP program. Mm-hmm. Let me take you to page 348, where they just said, oh, guess what? You are no longer eligible to write off your child care or get a benefit, a child care benefit. You go through and you show not just where the corporate welfare is, but you also show where they're taking the law and taking the rules and shoving it up your poor ass and making you pay through your taxes for the same shit that these guys are going to get. That's what you have to do. Or am I missing something?
No. That's exactly how you do it. And you start naming places. You start saying, oh, yeah, in South Carolina, where half of your state budget comes from the federal government, you're going to lose this year. Oh, Tennessee, y'all want to get rid of the Department of Education? You're going to lose $1.6 billion for your schools. I mean, you got to sit here and be that ruthless, and you got to communicate that. And let me just be last point. You can't send these fucking whiny-ass people out on television and on radio. And you got to be willing to have people who know how to speak in sound bites, who know how to be theatrical. And so guess what? Go let Jasmine Crockett and Ayanna Pressley and AOC teach some of these Democrats how to communicate. And I say, Nancy Pelosi, stop being in a pissing match with great communicators in your party. Because when you don't control the House and you don't control the Senate and you don't control the White House and you're not going to control the judiciary, all you can do is go out there and talk directly to the people. So you're going to need real communicators who know how to do it. So bring the whiteboards and everything else. Because this means war.
I'll tell you, I learned something from Roland today. I'm going to be bringing props next time we have a barbershop together. He had two props. That's like, that's what we're going to be theatrical. We're going to make our message. I wasn't ready for any props. I got my LaCroix here, you know? Like, that's not good enough. Hey, Tim,
this is me right here, baby. It's just a cup and something in it.
No, Tim, you got to realize, there's a reason I never got in my 6 years at CNN. I mean, just because when I went on CNN, this was my, I'm telling you right now, CNN needs to call me and let me deal with Scott Jennings. I'd knock his ass out at two shows. This is very simple. I had a very simple philosophy. I'm here to put your ass in a rhetorical body bag.
I'll pay for that. We can do pay-per-view. Actually, I don't want to pay Jennings. I don't want to give Jennings a cut, so maybe not pay-per-view.
Hey, Tim, the next time the Bulwark has a little thing at the Howard Theater, we can do a little setup with our boy Roland, man.
All right, I'm down. Listen, I'm in.
I'm ready to swing and tell Nicole Wallace, MSNBC, y'all can call her Brother Moore, because the bottom line is this here. Our people are starving for information. And what they're getting these nice, cute people who are talking. No. This is war.
Well, so that's why I love both your platforms, the Bulwark and Roland Martin Unfiltered. And look, I give absolute props to both of you, because what you've done is you've gone outside of the traditional ecosystem where you've got to follow a set of rules that are designed not to have your properties succeed and thrive.
Yeah.
And you've each done that in the communication space. I remember having the conversation with Roland Martin 10 years ago, and he was talking about where this little thing called streaming that no one's paying attention to, and that it is going to be the shit. Everything is moving in this direction. You got ahead of the curve. Tim, you and the team at Bulwark did the exact same thing. You looked at the marketplace and saying, hey, we aren't this, we aren't that. This is the place where people, not just voters, but the American people can come and have a conversation and understand the shit the way it's really going.
Real.
And we're not afraid. We're not afraid in this moment to have that conversation. And that, I think, is going to be the strength of what happens next. Those places and spaces that are having the conversation that the way you guys laid it out today, I think that's where you begin that engagement with MAGA in a way they're not ready to engage, because they know they're dealing with the Democratic Party that's not going to do that. And so they're successful without even having to work at it, because they don't have that level of opposition. What you guys are talking about is if you're going to play Akeem, you better come prepared to play. You're going to stand on that toe-to-toe with Johnson, then you better be prepared to hit
him. Let's do it.
You can't take the plowshare and turn it into, take that sword and turn it into a plowshare. If you do, you then need to turn that plowshare and shove it up his political ass.
And that's why Joe Rogan, Ben Shapiro, all of those folks, Mark Levin, they won't call certain people because they know how it's going to end up. Patrick Bet-David, when he called me, he thought he was going to, he opened up with, have you ever been wrong? I was like, no. He thought I was going to bite on his bullshit. But again, what they're used to affirmation TV or affirmation media. No, this is about swinging, fighting, put them in rhetorical body bags.
There you go. I love it. Roland Martin. Roland Martin Unfiltered on YouTube and Black Star Network. Folks, if you haven't checked it out, y'all missed some shit. So you need to get
wait a minute. Tim is like, what the hell did I just get invited
to? I don't know. I love this. I'm thrilled. I'm like, finally, somebody put me in a rhetorical body bag on this YouTube page. I've been carrying this damn page. I'm the one that's got to be flapping my jaw all the time. Finally got to be like, whoa, all right, I'll let this guy check the wheel for a bit.
I looked over at Tim at one point. Tim was like, my work is done.
Exactly. We'll see you guys.
Tim Miller, appreciate the Bulwark. I love it. Thank you both for being a part of it. Of course, our friend Karen Hunter, the host of the Karen Hunter Show on SiriusXM Urban View Channel 126. Thank all three of you for helping me kick off this new year. I got my body bags. I've been using them from time to time. I'm ready to use some more. Roland, Tim, thank you guys so much. Folks, that does it for this time together. You know I love it when you do that voodoo thing and the downloads and the likes here on the YouTube channel and on the podcast. It's always been a treat for me to work with Tim, but now to be a part of the Bulwark family, I really appreciate the platforming of the Michael Steele podcast here at the Bulwark. Until next time, guys, do the thing you need to do. Keep it honest. Keep it real. Take no bullshit from anyone. And got a new lesson for you. Carry a body bag with you, because you may need to use that bitch. All right, guys. Take care.
Appreciate it.
Peace out.
And now, for a moment of clarity.
Will be a peaceful transfer of power. And today, I did what I have done my entire career, which is take seriously the oath that I have taken many times to support and defend the Constitution of the United States, which included today performing my constitutional duties to ensure that the people of America, the voters of America, will have their votes counted, that those votes matter, and that they will determine then the outcome of an election. I do believe very strongly that America's democracy is only as strong as our willingness to fight for it. Every single person, their willingness to fight for and respect the importance of our democracy. Otherwise, it is very fragile, and it will not be able to withstand moments of crisis. And today, America's democracy stood.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.